हरि सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मविद्विषावहै शांति 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 ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
The Sangatitu Sutra 27, page 37. But the earth itself is station in space, occupying a certain portion of it. Therefore, the space itself is the support of the earth. In fact, space is the first manifestation of the inert nature and the first support of all phenomenal objects. Ultimately, the inert nature and the sentient beings originate from the Supreme Lord. Sutra 27. Jare bara shyananda brahmo vaikunta brahmas chashangata. Due to the delusion created by Maya, the fallen souls with their defective intellect misconstrue the phenomenal misery as bliss and the phenomenal abode as their eternal abode and become attached to them. Okay, so here we have the Ananda Brahma and Vaikuntha Brahma. Right? These two illusions are called Ananda Brahma and Vaikuntha Brahma. Srila Prabhupada discusses Ananda Brahma in his purports to mantras 7 and 11. The spiritual entities are meant for enjoyment. As stated in the Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12, Anandamayo Bhyasata. By nature and constitution, every living being, including the Supreme Lord and each of his parts and parcels, is meant for eternal enjoyment. The living beings who are encaged in the material tabernacle are constantly seeking enjoyment, but they are seeking it on the wrong platform. Apart from the material platform is the spiritual platform, where the Supreme Being enjoys himself with his innumerable associates. On that platform there is no trace of material qualities, and therefore that platform is called Nirguna. On the Nirguna platform there is never a clash over the object of enjoyment. Here, in the material world, there is always a clash between different individual beings, because here the proper center of enjoyment is missed. The real center of enjoyment is the Supreme Lord, who is the center of the sublime and spiritual rasa dance. We are all meant to join him and enjoy life with one transcendental interest and without any clash. That is the highest platform of spiritual interest. And as soon as one realizes this perfect form of oneness, there can be no question of illusion, moha, or lamentation, shoka. So Ananda Brahma means the illusion of Ananda, since its soul is Ananda. Then they think that the material world is a place of Ananda, because that's their place. Right? And Vaikuntha will mean that one thinks it's eternal. Right? So one thinks it's eternal and a place of happiness. Right? Because then what your activity is simply going to be in the eternal position, to act in such a way to gain your own happiness. Right? So you don't have to mention the middle. So eternality and happiness, Ananda. That's why then the Bhagavatam and constantly is pointed out in the Vedic literatures that the material world is temporary and full of misery. Right? You know, why those two? Why not something else? Right? It smells bad, or, you know, something else. But no, it always says these, because this is the illusions. Right? Because if we understand this is temporary, why would we invest so much into it? And if we thought that you're not going to get happiness from it, why would we invest in it? but we actually sincerely think eternally it's going to be here, and eternally I can be happy. So if I make my endeavor, I'll be happy. Right?
And this corresponds, as the Prabhupada points in the last words, to the tendency to control and to enjoy. Illusion and
yeah, control means is the eternal principle, right? Because that's the situation. So we think we're always in control, you know, and the situation that we're in that is the source of our what do you call it? Our security, right? Our identity, but it's not. So all these fine points then become dealt with, right? But just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making is that here in your Upanishadic, you're trying to cut it down to the minimal amount of main points, that from those points everything else can be explained. Right? So then here, then delusion, then you have Ananda Brahman Vaikuntha Brahma. So anything to do with the concept of eternality will come in there, and anything to do with happiness will come in. Because action or avideya comes only after being appreciating the situation and then becoming attached to the results you can gain, then there's action, right? But if you see the field as spiritual and the results for Krishna, the endeavor is going to be spiritual. Does that make sense? So that's why you only have to mention the two, you know, or control and attachment, fear and envy. Fear and attachment. You know, envy and attachment. So it's the same too. It's just whether you're what perspective you're taking. You know. Because you have, because of fear, then you're identifying with the material world. Because of envy, you're identifying with the material world. So yeah. So here's that we're thinking we're the center. So if we just adjust it that Krishna's the center, right, then our need for, you know, that security, that eternality, and that happiness, then there's no problem. Right? That makes us servant and the result for Krishna. The happiness, Krishna is the center of that happiness. It doesn't mean we won't be happy. Right? You know, you water the tree, the whole tree becomes happy. Right? You put, you know, food into the stomach, then the whole body becomes happy. Right? But we're somehow not thinking we have to do it ourselves. Right? Does that make sense? That. Yeah. So he's pointing out that here is the common platform, that oneness, that it's Krishna, everyone's meant for happiness, but Krishna is the center of that happiness. Right? But otherwise, as far as we're concerned, as long as we're happy, if everyone else isn't happy, you know, it would be nice if everyone could be happy, but at least if we're happy, then, you know, it works. You know. But here it's that, no, Krishna is the center, then everyone can be happy. Then from Mantra 11. Since all living beings are his beloved sons, his parts and parcels, God is more sorry than we ourselves to see the suffering we are constantly undergoing in this material condition. This guy is so clever. He's walking along, but he's trailing, you know, things. So when you try to move him, he's still connected. So even if he falls off, he's still good. The miseries of this material world serve to indirectly remind us of our incompatibility with dead matter. Intelligent living entities generally take note of these reminders and engage themselves in the culture of vidya, or transcendental knowledge. Human life is the best opportunity for the culture of spiritual knowledge. And a human being who does not take advantage of this opportunity is called a naradhama, the lowest of human beings. Right. So who does not take advantage of, it's very important, it's a subtle point. Someone who doesn't know, you know, will be a muda. But when they know and don't take advantage, that's a naradhama. Right? Because if you don't know, you're an ass. right? But if you know and still don't take it, you're worse than an ass. So that makes you lowest of mankind. Right? So a very important thing. Okay.
Maharaj.
Yes.
Here when he says, talking about the center, if I try to remember those levels of consciousness, which is on the Gita, in the, when it's on Jnana, Jnanamoy
is understand the emotional platform, when you understand your duties and your relationship with everybody else as dharma.
Right.
You know your what you call your piety and all that. Vijnanamoy, you understand you're the soul.
So that's when Krishna comes in.
Can, if you understand you're the soul, the servant of Krishna. If you don't, then like the Brahma bodies or the Maya bodies, then that Krishna doesn't. He has as Brahman, but one doesn't catch that relationship.
Only Anandamoy.
Yeah, Anandamoy, that's the actual platform. But as devotees, we understand it from the very beginning. So even if one is caught up in these other things, let's say one's in Pranamoy, so one understands it, but when a situation that's dealing with economics, justice or morality or ethics is as at hand, one will most likely be distracted by those and, you know, forget Krishna being the center. Right? You know, because economics, whatever it takes to get the money, then that's good enough. Or the justice, whatever, something went wrong, someone should be punished for what they've done wrong. But it's not that right and wrong is based on connection to Krishna, right? Or ethics, that it's not based on connection to Krishna. But, you know, the sadhana will be connected to Krishna, they're taking a prasad, will be connected to Krishna, you know, all these different kinds of things. You know what I'm saying? So for the devotee, it's always there. It's just a matter of where their focus is, right? So then Jnanamoy means the focus is on performing their duties. Vijnanamoy means the focus is on Brahman, you know, understanding the workings of the material world. Like that Anandamoy means it's absorbed in Krishna, you know, just in the relationship. Does that make sense? So it's not that you don't have all these going on at once, but it's like, as you were saying, when you're going through the stages of Shraddha to Prema, you know, it's just which one's the prominent focal point. It doesn't mean that it doesn't include the ones before it, you know, in a full degree and to some degree, you know, in the latter ones.
So when he mentions clash, even if you're a devotee, if he is on, say, Pranamoy, he may have a little bit of clash for not understanding the center completely.
Yes, because clash will come. Because clash basically means it'll, in a grosser form, it will come up due to what Kapila Muni describes as devotional service in the modes of passion and ignorance. Common point, one of the common points between them is that there's the element of being a separatist. Right? You're doing devotional service, but it's your idea, and what's important to you is the prominent element. It's not so much the duties or the shastric thing. It's what you want to do that makes the prominent. So because you want to do it, then someone else is going to get in the way. Right? So one is ignorance, means you're proud, you think you're special or better, or, you know, like that, get angry. The passion means that there's some fruit of result you want. But, you know, you're performing devotional service, but the mixes there create that. Does that make sense? So therefore you can analyze the mixed devotional service also from the modes of passion and ignorance there. Goodness means you'll follow the rules nicely, you'll be situated properly, but that being attached to the goodness, then you don't want any material trouble. So then it becomes a difficulty that preaching means trouble. So the tendency is not to take up anything that's going to create any kind of difficulty. Does that make sense? So therefore it doesn't have the grosser problems that the person in passion and ignorance will have. But it still has problems because, you know, when there's a limit to how far you want to get involved in things.
you know, that by others would be considered, you know, important. The person in mode of passion ignorance, what they consider important is what the mode of person in mode of goodness doesn't. Right? Does that make sense? You know, what the person in the mode of goodness feels important, they don't. So there's still going to be a clash. Right? But if it's seen in connection with the Lord, there's no problem. But if it's not, then the problem will come. Right? So that's why probably gives the example, you throw one pebble into the water, you get these concentric rings, and they'll go across the whole lake. But if you throw more than one in, then you get, you know, all these things, and it'll clash. So that's the problem. Because if Krishna is the center, then you can connect unlimited rings to it. So unlimited living entities can be involved in the same endeavor and not have a problem, because he's the center. Right? But if one keeps oneself as the center, all you need is two. You know, like that. I think that's the adage when it comes to tangling, right? You know, I don't know, there's I think it
takes two to tangle.
Yeah, it takes two to tangle. Yeah. Yes.
On this point of performance of duties, what is the difference from manamoy to gyanamoy? What is the
focus there? Manamoy means it's the performance of the duties that's important. Vijnanamoy means you understand.
Wait,
you said Gyanamoy or Vijnanamoy? Gyanamoy and Manamoy are the same.
One place Prabhupada mentions them separately.
But then does he say Vijnanamoy or just says Gyanamoy?
He points like the Manamoy and later Gyanamoy.
Yeah, but then that means is that, so that's there, or you, Manamoy is Gyanamoy and Gyanamoy is Vijnanamoy. So you can use either of those. So your Vijnanamoy means the focus is on the nature of the soul, Brahman. Like that. You perform your duties, all that's going on nicely. But the focus is on Brahman. You know, the mechanics of the world, like the last six chapters of Gita, the focus is there. That's Vijnanamoy. Yes.
So Manamoy would be the good pious resolve.
Good pious, but that's there. But even if it's not fruit of it, the focus is on the proper performance of your duties. Does that make sense? Like that. So the person on that then is very righteous, does everything nice. It's not self-righteous, it's righteous. Because they are. They're pious. They're doing everything properly. They're following the authority. Like that. Does that make sense? But that's where the focus is. Then there's discrepancies in somebody's life, then it tends to, the disturbance is because it's against manamoy, right? Rather than it's not useful in devotional service.
And in Vijnanamoy, one tries to minimize his duties to have more time to focus on Brahma.
Basically.
Like Vijnanas.
Yeah, but I you could, but at this point I wouldn't cross the definitions here, because the point is manamoy can also be the mode of goodness. You know what I'm saying? So you just have your duties, you're not interested in doing anything outside your duties, right? The person in passion, even though it may not be his duty, he may have an interest in it, right? Because he just wants more. Or he may be satisfied with his own duties, but he wants to make sure he gets the maximum out of it. So Vijnanamoy simply means that one understands one's the soul and everything is functioning because of Brahman. Does that make sense? That's the point. Now, we're saying is that when it's mixed devotional service, then you have the element that they don't want to get involved in anything troublesome. Right. So, if that means they don't want to get involved in family life, raising lots of money, you know, social prestige and that's a good thing. Right? But if that means that they're not willing to get and take up certain preaching endeavors because of the trouble, then that's not a good thing. Right? So the point is this connectability to Krishna which defines it. Does that make sense? Yes.
Regarding illusion of happiness, this statement that on the material platform there is a drop of happiness just refers to this moment when there is absence of problem.
Yes, that's where it means. No, when it's saying is the drop of happiness means what is the volume you can get. What is defined as happiness, you know what I'm saying, is when the problem you have goes away and you obtain, you know, what when you obtain that obtain whatever it is that you're needing. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's how it's gained. That's its mechanics. But the amount you can get is one drop. That's it.
But if we see it from the point of view that Brahman is, or the Brahma Jyoti, is not even happiness, it's just the absence of pain. So that so-called happiness is not even...
No, but it's the same. It's the same thing. Is that
just nomenclature?
Yeah, but yes, of course. But here he's talking about volume, right? The volume of happiness is one drop, and that, depending on what perspective you're taking that from, then it gets, that drop becomes smaller and smaller. You know what I'm saying? What do you mean by drop compared to?
Usually compared to ocean. Usually it's compared to ocean.
Yes, but what is that ocean?
Just Brahman.
Brahman. So that means there is meaning the happiness of Lord Brahma is only worth a drop. You know, and as we pointed out from the Taittiriya Upanishad, that's you're talking about, you know, many times, you know, probably millions and millions of times greater than the happiness you can get on this planet. You know. And they start with this planet and saying, you know, that drop means being the emperor of the world, you know, without any rivals, right? So in other words, Yudhishthir in Indraprastha before the gambling match, that's considered a standard, you know, unit of human happiness. Anything less than you're getting into a serious microscopic portions of that drop, right? And that's one. Then the Gandharvas, the Pitris are 100 times that. The Gandharvas, 100 times that. The Deva Gandharvas, 100 times that. Then the lower, the citizens, 100 times that. The one that manages the universe, 100 times that. Indra, 100 times that. Right? Brihaspati, 100 times that. Prajapati's 100 times that. Brahma, 100 times that. So then we understand that that's back to nothing, and then Brahma's happiness is a drop compared to Brahman, you know, which is like an ocean, and that's said to be a drop compared to bhakti.
Trillion fold is compared like to a fragment for a fragmental portion of a drop compared to unlimited ocean.
Yes.
Trillion fold. There is this trillion fold, this happiness trillion fold drop compared.
Yeah. So then, so many ways it's presented. In other words, the point is it's not much. You just want to say something, just say, how you say, it's only a drop, but if you want to get technical, then it's a fraction of a portion of a drop. And that's just to give you something to work with, right? Because it's actually less than that, but you know, that's, you know, something you can relate to. But there is that sense, you know, of well-being, because that's the neutral state of the jiva. So there's no material problem. So it, compared to this, so it's pleasant. That's why it's pointed out is that pleasantness one shouldn't become distracted by. One should be determined to continue with the devotional endeavor.
Because pleasantness is just feel, it's not the goal, it's just sun.
Yeah. But it's the nature of the living entity, so.
Vaikuntha Brahma is discussed in the purports to mantras 11, 12, and 14. Since the creation of the material world, everyone has been trying to attain a permanent life. But the laws of nature are so cruel that no one has been able to avoid the hand of death. No one wants to die, nor does anyone want to become old or diseased. The law of nature, however, does not allow anyone immunity from old age, disease, or death. Nor has the advancement of material knowledge solved these problems. Material science can discover the nuclear bomb to accelerate the process of death, but it cannot discover anything that can protect man from the cruel hands of old age, disease, and death. Most of people don't look at it that way. They'll say, life is longer and this and that. You probably could say that going back 20 years. You know? Like that. But I can't say that, you know, before it was, they increased the life, people were living longer and everything. So, you know, 70s, 80s is pretty standard. But nowadays, people dying of heart attacks and that in their 40s, 50s is getting much more common. Like that. So they're kind of, it's going the other way for them. You know, it's not exactly. Because, you know, one has to see is that the technology may have advanced, but it's not necessarily that the quality of life has advanced. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just like if you look at, let's say, you see older neighborhoods, you know, in out-of-the-way places, like in Australia. Yeah, there's a place called Perth. Technically, how would you term it? The city itself is the farthest away from any other center of civilization of any other place in the world. Right? You know, from London to the next city is not far. Or from, you know, it's like this. Everywhere it's like, but there, it's, you know, you're thousands of miles before there is anything. You know, it's just, there's Perth, and then there's desert, huge, like that. So, you know, it's kind of in its own time frame there. So you go there, and you go out into the suburbs, and, you know, you have a house. You know, it's one of those where you have the street. Then you have some grass. Then you have the sidewalk. Then you have your front lawn. Right? Because that grass in between technically belongs to the government. But you take care of it. Because they could plant trees there, do stuff like that. Then there's the lawn. Then your house. Right? Then there's the backyard. Then there's the alley. And then it's the next guy's. Right? And then you have space on both sides of your house. Right? But you have a fence there. So one may look at the neighborhood and think, wow, these houses are close together, you know, because there's, you know, there's 3 to 5 meters between houses on each side. You know, you have 3 to 5 meters, then the fence, then the next guy, you know, and you have, you know, 5 or more meters in the front. And then you think, wow, this is really close together, you know, when you're growing up in that. But if you go into the bigger cities, you know, everyone lives in an apartment, and they've never even heard of front lawns and back lawns. You read about it in the literature, you know, Huckleberry Finn, or was a, you know, like that, or, you know, something. You understand? So the element is, the quality of life has just gone. Before, people had space, and this is living tight. Before it was, you know, it's like when they're establishing Alachua there, that area. You buy homesteads there, but in 5-acre blocks, right, or 2-hectare blocks. That's the minimum you can buy. And you can only have one house on it. You can't put a whole bunch, right? Five acres, you could put up, you know, 10,000, you know, person, how do you call it? You know, apartment buildings if it was in Hong Kong. But there, so you can have one house. That's it, you know, because it's meant for, you know, the rural life. And so, does that make sense? So it's just the quality is going down and people think that it's advancing.
But it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. This place in the middle that you're sitting, that little rug there, I've seen apartments like that in New York, and that was like maybe 5 years ago. It was $1,000 a month to stay in something like that. You know, it's a place big enough you can lay down and all that. It's got a little dinky kitchen thing and a little dinky bathroom thing. You know, and people are saying, wow, I was so fortunate I got this, you know, like that. It was like, you know, really hard to find. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's called a shoebox, you know, like that. Monty Python goofs about that, you know. And you're going, wow, great, you know. They thought it was a joke, right? You think it's great. From the Puranas we learn the activities of the Hiranyakashipu, a king who was very much advanced materially, wanting to conquer cruel death by his material acquisitions and the strength of his nescience. He underwent a type of meditation so severe that the inhabitants of all the planetary systems became disturbed by his mystic powers. Right? If you're trying to generate life, why would it disturb everybody else, right? He forced the creator of the universe, the demigod Brahma, to come down to him. He then asked Brahma for the benediction of becoming Amara, by which one does not die. Brahma said he cannot award the benediction because even he, the material creator, who rules all planets, is not Amara. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8:17, Brahma lives a long time, but that does not mean he is immortal. The whole point here is that even Hiranyakashipu, the most powerful of materialists, could not become deathless by his various plans. What then can be accomplished by the tiny Hiranyakashipus of today, whose plans are thwarted from moment to moment? Right? His were going great until Nrisingadev came along. But otherwise, he was on a roll, right? But the Hiranyakashipus of today, the little dinky ones, and from moment to moment, they're having problems. So Prabhupada's point is, Brahma, he has such a long life, and he's pious, he still dies. Hiranyakashipu, who really takes things into his own hands, makes his own plans, does everything, controls the whole universe, he still dies.
Sooner.
Yeah, a little sooner. Yeah, like that. Right, yeah. So the point is that no one's not going to die. It's just the way it is. It's like, you know, sort of get used to it. You know, it's kind of... Sri Upanishad instructs us not to make one-sided attempts to win the struggle for existence. Everyone is struggling hard for existence, but the laws of material nature are so hard and fast that they do not allow anyone to surpass them. In order to obtain a permanent life, one must be prepared to go back to Godhead. So it cannot be one-sided. It means you're going to make your own. Hiranyakashipu, that's one-sided. He makes his own endeavor. Right? But the devotee, makes his endeavor connected to the Lord, so it's not one-sided. So it's not that death doesn't happen, but he attains the deathless platform. Right? So Hiranyakashipu doesn't attain the deathless platform. Yes?
Therefore, scriptures use this desire for like, standing behind Vaikuntha Brahma to elevate persons, saying that heavenly planets are Amara. This is like the same principle.
It means that people are worried about this. So if you say that if you go here, you'll be deathless, and people work very hard. Now, what are they, I mean, in principle, what are they working hard at?
To enjoy the future.
Okay, I mean, there's the fruit of it, but what is their method to get it?
Yes. Prescribed.
Prescribed duties. So they have to follow Shastra, they have to have a guru. They have to perform sacrifice, give in charity, you know, be austere, like that. They have to develop all good qualities. The better the qualities, the more pure, the higher the planet you go to. So in other words, they're endeavoring for all those things that are useful in Krishna consciousness. But they won't do it if it's Krishna consciousness that's being offered. But if it's heavenly enjoyment, they'll work very hard. So at least it's progressive. Now, he's accepted that lifestyle and that method and that authority. Now if he comes in contact with the devotee in the process and then converts to Krishna consciousness, right, then his whole lifestyle is very useful. All he has to do is give up the fruitive intent. But the actual process and endeavor doesn't change. Does that make sense? So that's the advantage of it. Or the jnani, he's given up material endeavor, he's absorbed in knowledge, but he also the same. It's based on scripture, he has guru, he has a sadhana. And so then, and he's given up that material endeavor, so he's situated himself on the transcendental platform. Now, if he comes in contact with a devotee, then, you know, will be very advanced on the process. Right? Difficulty is generally because of the lack of sincerity. It's rare you ever hear of them coming in contact. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... In the scriptures, so the next mantra 12. In the scriptures, there are recommendations for worshipping demigods under certain circumstances. But at the same time, these scriptures state that there is normally no need to do this. Right? The scriptures themselves will say it, but because there's a huge volume of description of how to be involved in it, and what benefits you'll get, and how good it is, when it does say it's actually not very important, no one notices those verses. They get a little bewildered, but you know they're so inspired by everything else. But it's just the way it works. So it's not that they don't explain it, just no one catches it. So the jnana shastras, then they'll only take those points that tell how it's not worthwhile. And that will be the volume of work. But then within that, it'll also explain about Krishna consciousness. But generally they don't catch that. Same principle, yes.
Does it happen by the association of devotees that one takes up Krishna consciousness only?
Yes, only by Krishna, only by association.
So you said the example of Maharaj Prajnabharishant.
Yes, but he, Narad Muni. Otherwise, without Narad Muni, he was very, you know, content and committed to his karmakanda endeavor because he thought that's all there was. He didn't realize there was more. No one had told him. All his Brahmins were Karmakanda. So they didn't know that there was more. And so naturally they're not going to tell him that there's more. So he was actually surprised when Narad Muni pointed out there's something else. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.23, it is clearly stated that the results derived from worshipping the demigods are not permanent. Right? It'll say you're Amara, but it'll say the results aren't permanent. So generally you don't think about that, or you know, you have some other plan. You know, you don't necessarily put together what that means. Since the entire material universe is impermanent, what is achieved within the darkness of material existence is also impermanent. The question is how to obtain real and permanent light, right? Since the entire universe is impermanent, what is achieved in the darkness of the existence, right? So the whole universe itself, meaning the whole Hiranyagarbha, is impermanent. The Lord will breathe and it will go back inside, right? And then inside that, then the living entities who are in ignorance, then they perform their activities, so how will they be permanent since the whole universe is not permanent? You know what I'm saying? The question is how to obtain real and permanent life. So he was indicating that not only is permanent a problem, but real is a problem. The Lord states, as soon as one reaches him by devotional service, which is the one and only way to approach the personality of Godhead. Right? Here again, it's the one and only. There aren't any other ways. One obtains complete freedom from the bondage of birth and death. Right? So obtaining devotional service, then you're free from this. Because then you're actually transcendental. In other words, the path of salvation from the material clutches fully depends on the principles of knowledge and detachment gained from serving the Lord. Right? So knowledge and detachment gained not in service to the Lord won't solve the problem of impermanence. Right? It can't. So the only thing that can actually do it, because it may be longer term, just like for the person here, than the demigods, so that's on a very elevated platform. Right? And then from the demigods up to the Prajapatis and that, like this, it just keeps going higher and higher to Lord Brahma. So we'll say this very great, but still, that's nothing. Right? So the same way is that this situation any other way of getting free from material clutches, even though it will be way longer than the lifetime of Brahma, it's still in connection with eternity, temporary. Right? So does that make sense? So you can get knowledge and detachment, but it's only the knowledge and detachment coming from devotional service that will solve the problem. Other knowledge and other detachment won't. You have great material knowledge, very materially detached, you know, just by, that's not what's going to help. It's only when it devotional service. Now, if you can take that knowledge and detachment, connect it to devotional service, very nice. Right? But if one thinks it has its validity on its own, then it doesn't really mean anything. You know, if one is proud that, yes, I was very educated before I joined, or very detached before I joined, like that, then it will become an obstacle. Yes. Because it's based on the material condition, our social standing, our education, our abilities. You know what I'm saying? That's what one's proud of. So that's the motive. Does that make sense? In other words, the path of salvation from the material clutches fully depends on the principles of knowledge and detachment gained from serving the Lord. The pseudo-religionists have neither knowledge nor detachment from material affairs. For most of them want to live in the golden shackles of material bondage under the shadow of philanthropic activities disguised as religious principles. Right? Golden shackles, right, instead of iron shackles. So it's just nicer. They just want to live in that thing of, you know, people appreciating, doing nice work for others, like that. And they'll claim it's religion, but it's not actually. It's disguised as... In religion, part of it is you're giving in charity. But if it's in the morning, you get up, take your bath, you know, worship the deities, give charity to the Brahmins and all that, then that's part of your religious duties. But if it's you're just giving charity, because there you're giving to a Brahmin, right? If you're giving to poor people and all that, that's part of actually the pranamoy duties, your ethics. Right? You can help others and do that. It's nice work. It's important. But you can't say that's religious duties. Because giving in charity to just anybody and giving in charity to a Brahmin are not the same. Right? The point is you're giving to the Brahmin, but you're also trying to take care of others also. So that's does that make sense? So it's part of the charity, but it's not the prominent, it's not the definitive meaning of charity. Does that make sense? You know, you're left over. You buy new furniture, so your old furniture you give to your shudras, like that, your dependents and others like that. So these are the kind of things that you're doing. You're taking care of others that don't have the same fortune, but that's different from, yeah. So they're disguising it as religious duties, but the actual religious duty is to be following Shastra to please the Lord. That's real religion. Right? So even if they're following Shastra but not seeing the Lord, it's still technically not real religion. Right? It's pious. You know, we would classify it within that category, but it's not actually real. Right? It's religion within the material sphere, but it's still not real. You know, like if you look in the mirror, there is a face there. But it's not a real face. So like that. By a false display of religious sentiments, they present a show of devotional service while indulging all sorts of immoral activities.
In this way, they pass as spiritual masters and devotees of God. Okay, and then verse 14. By its so-called advancement of knowledge, human civilization has created many material things, including spaceships and atomic energy. Yet it has failed to create a situation in which people need not die, take birth again, become old, or suffer from disease. Whenever an intelligent man raises the question of these miseries before a so-called scientist, the scientist very cleverly replies that material science is progressing and that ultimately it will be possible to render man deathless, ageless, and diseaseless. But they don't point out birthless. Such answers prove the scientist's gross ignorance of material nature. In material nature, everyone is under the stringent laws of matter and must pass through six stages of existence: birth, growth, maintenance, production of byproducts, deterioration, and finally death. Right? When you say it like that, then it has a particular flavor. You know, it doesn't say birth, growing up, you know, with your loving family, you know, then being a mature adult, situating yourself in life, having children, you know, and like that. Then gradually, you know, how you say,
growing
old gracefully, and then passing from this existence like that, you know.
With dignity.
Yeah. So here, no, just birth, growth, maintenance, production of byproducts, deterioration, and finally death. Yeah, very clinical, because that's, I mean, people like science, so here's science, you know, it's like that. You know.
Please, just the facts.
Just the facts, yes. Yes. Okay. If we do our sadhana without thinking about Krishna.
Uh-huh.
Will it be classified as the same if we perform our devotional activities without thinking? Okay, without devotion. If we perform devotional activities without devotion, is it in the same category as Kevala Bhakti? As we were discussing this morning, on, you know, Vishwanath describing Prema Bhakti. See, the overall determination is that you're doing that service to please Krishna, right? Then it'll be in the devotional category. But if at the time, while you're performing the service, you're remembering Krishna, you get more benefit than if you're performing the service and not remembering Krishna. You understand? So if you're cooking for Krishna, you're cooking, let's say, lunch to offer to Krishna. So that's your determination. But while you're cooking, you're thinking of something else. It still is devotional service. But it won't have the same benefit as if you had been thinking of Krishna the whole time. Does that make sense? Like that. And also along with that comes is if you know what you're doing, it's always going to give more results than if you don't. Like that. That doesn't mean that knowledge is higher. It means that if the capacity is there to understand the technical things, than someone who does, and that's if he's just doing it out of sentiment when he could actually know why he's doing it, right? Like Nanda Baba, the residents of Vrindavan, just out of sentiment were performing the Indra Yajna, just because they've always been doing it. They didn't know why. So Krishna's point, well, someone who's in knowledge and knows why he's doing it will get more benefit than the person who doesn't. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Just the point in line with, you know, just the facts.
Just the facts, yes.
Prabhupada, they were speaking with Prabhupada and somehow palmistry came into the topic. And so they're discussing about it. Yeah, Brahmins could read the future. So when the Buddha says, Prabhupada, can you read palms? The Buddha said, oh yes. Prabhupada, would you read mine? And he goes, okay. Prabhupada put his in there, he says, oh, all bad. He was freaking out. He says, birth, death, old age. This is all bad. Just the facts.
Just the facts, yeah. Good point. Right. No one in contact with material nature can go beyond these six laws of transformation. Therefore, no one, whether demigod, man, plant, or animal, can survive forever in the material world. The duration of life varies according to species. Lord Brahma, the chief living being within this material universe, lives for millions and millions of years, while a minute germ lives for some hours only. But no one in the material world can survive eternally. Things are born or created under certain conditions. They stay for some time, and if they continue to live, they grow, procreate, gradually dwindle, and finally vanish. According to these laws, it's funny. They're born under certain conditions. They stay for some time, and if they continue to live, then you'll get the maintenance. You know, the maintenance byproducts, deterioration, and death.
The lucky ones.
Yeah, the ones that make it. Yeah. According to these laws, even the Brahmas, of which there are millions in different universes, are all liable to death either today or tomorrow. Therefore, the entire universe is called Martya Loka, the place of death. Material scientists and politicians are trying to make this place deathless because they have no information of the deathless spiritual nature. This is due to their ignorance of the Vedic literature, which contains full knowledge confirmed by mature transcendental experience. Unfortunately, modern man is averse to receiving knowledge from the Vedas, Puranas, and other scriptures. Right? So that deathlessness that they're looking for is because of the nature of the soul being deathless, but they don't have information that it's not here, it's in the spiritual world. Right? And then, the sad thing, he says, modern man is averse to receiving knowledge from the Vedas, Puranas, and other scriptures. Right? Manu describes modern as someone who's not Vedic. Right? So therefore, they're not coming from that the Vedic heritage. They're actually averse, right? Not that they're not interested, don't know. They're actually averse. They don't want to hear about it. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. The Ananda Brahma is further divided into two types: the delusion of observing pleasures derived by present senses, and the delusion of audible pleasures, heavenly enjoyments. Right? Audible means you've heard about them. You know, that if you go to the heavenly planets and that, or, you know, you go to this resort, it'll be really nice, or go to this restaurant that's really great, or, you know, so you always have that element, is that there's what you're dealing with right now with your senses, and then there's what you've heard about that you could be dealing with your senses.
Does this include modern man's dreams about the future?
Yeah.
Or in the future we will go to space travel.
It sounds great. Yeah. You know, you can have a place get some land on the moon, you know, so like that. If we took you out to some place in the middle of nowhere where there was no water, right, and the ground was basically rock or dust, and say, here, we're giving this land here, you know, prosper and multiply, right, would you think it's a good bargain?
Better than if there was no air.
Yes, of course. But my point is that's what's being offered. Yes.
In the 70s, they were selling, right after this whole Apollo thing, there were people going around door to door selling putting land on the moon.
Yeah, yeah.
People were buying.
Yeah, yeah. What if the claims are any good? The Karmakanda scriptures tempt the human beings with heavenly enjoyments, which are actually only delusions. They cannot truly satisfy the soul. Therefore, in the Katha Upanishad, Nachiketa tells Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, in the spiritual world there is not fear of old age or of you, O Death. There one crosses beyond both of them. In the spiritual world there is no anxiety to attain food and drink. The residents of the spiritual world enjoy transcendental bliss. Every human being soon meets his death. Quickly his senses become old and weak. Everyone's life is brief. Your chariots, singing and dancing will last only for a moment. Thinking material pious deeds as the best of all actions, and affirming that no other action is better than them, fools go to Swargaloka, enjoy, and then again return to this world, or the worlds beneath it. Right?
So this is how the Upanishads describe the heavenly pleasures. So it's slightly different than the Karmakanda, right? The delusion results from the jiva's defective association with matter, where he forgets his own spiritual character and endeavor to obtain happiness from miserable matter. Right? So his lack of knowledge and his endeavor to enjoy. So again, that knowledge and detachment is going to solve this problem, but coming from devotional service. In Bhagavad Gita 2:62-63, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. From anger, delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Right? So this is how Maya covers. Right? This is the process. You contemplate, you get attached. Krishna makes that point. I can deal with things, I don't get attached. You're jiva, you deal with something, you get attached. It's just the way it is. So getting attached, right, then the need for it develops. Right? And then anger arises if there's going to be a problem, you can't gain it, everything like this. Delusion. And then loss of memory. Because when the memory is lost, because much of the time you know that something that you're not supposed to do, by doing it, it doesn't work out well. Because it never did before. Yeah. But at this point, the memory is lost, so you don't think about that. You just think about the possibilities. Right? The herd, the shruti sukhat. The herd about happiness. Because when you actually get there, the second, you know, covering of Maya is that you don't enjoy yourself. But because you're so committed that I will, you're still looking. Okay, I didn't do it this way, or I should have done it this way or that way. So many ways you try. You speculate about how it could have been. But it's still, it's never gained. It's only talked about.
So this is the intelligence controlled by the mind.
Yes. Yeah. Because that's where intelligence gets lost. Because one becomes delusioned that it'll be good and everything like that. So this is how she covers. And then when she covers, then intelligence is lost. Then she throws you back down. Right? Until you lose the intelligence, there's no need. Because if she throws, then at that point you'll automatically understand, hey, this is stupid. No, but it's after, when you forget, then she throws you. Then in that condition, then your memory comes back. And then you go, this is stupid. Right? That's so... She's good. Yes.
Karma Kanda scriptures, they work on the platform of Paroksha. Ananda Brahma is first is a protection in Paroksha. Karma Kanda, they advise that for the Upanishads, do they work on the higher or Aparoksha?
Aparoksha means they're not going to work there. Means you can't, if you're explaining something, it can't be aparoksha. Aparoksha means you're experiencing it and you understand it at the same time, but as soon as you analyze it, you're not experiencing it. You know what I'm saying? If the kirtan's going on, you're fully absorbed, it's ecstatic, and you turn to your friend and go, wow, isn't this a great kirtan? Are you enjoying the kirtan? No. So aparoksha is finished. Right? This is your hearing from others. That's paroksha. Does that make sense? If you're using that level of gaining, you're hearing from others. Because they say it's great. You know, but it only looks great from here. You know what I'm saying?
In his commentary on these words, Sri Shankaracharya explains, right, so defective association with matter, he forgets his spiritual character. So by associating with matter, then he'll forget who he is. Now, if you understand that everything belongs to Krishna, technically you're not associating with matter. Right? Because matter means it's for you to enjoy. Right? Material world means the opportunity is there for you to enjoy it. If it's not for you to enjoy, but it's Krishna's, for his pleasure, that's not the material world. Inferior energy, yes, but not material world. Does that make sense?
Just this division of into types of ananda brahma. Can we say that delusion of observed pleasure is connected to karma?
I mean, what you're going to get, your present observed pleasures at present, right? That means that it will be according to your karma. You'll be getting that. But the audible pleasures means what you could get, right? You're getting is divided into two: what you are getting and what you hear about that you could get. Does that make sense? So in both of them, they inspire you. Either, you know, you're getting pleasures now, you're inspired that this is great. Or you hear about, yeah, you know, this is going to be a great place, so then you're thinking about it, yeah, when you go on vacation this summer, it'll be so great, and this way you get yourself through the year, you know, and all that. But then when you get out there and you're on the boat, they don't tell you about the nausea, and, you know, the clouds are, you know, covering like that, and, you know, the cold, freezing cold wind that's out there, and, you know, stuff like that. If you wanted no freezing cold wind, then why are you on this boat tour of the Baltic? You know, you should have been in the one that was going through the Caribbean. Like, but that would have cost you more because you're from Northern Europe, so therefore, you know what I'm saying? So these kind of, does that make sense? There's the heard about, and then the ones you're actually experiencing, right? So what you are experiencing, that's from your previous endeavors, the results of your previous endeavor, right? But what you hear about, that's what inspires you for your future endeavor.
We can say also it can be connected with mental speculation.
Mental speculation, I mean, it is mental speculation, but specifically here, mental speculation means that you are working out ways to enjoy within these two. Does that make sense? Means you're speculating that, you know, if we go here, then we'll enjoy, but then, you know, like that, it's kind of hot at that time, it's pretty humid, so if we go to that place, and we've heard that it's less, and that, like that, and, you know, when you're checking out all your options and what's better than the other, that's your mental speculation, you know. Or if having gone on it, it didn't work out, then you'll speculate what you could have done to have made it better, you know. Like that. I mean, so we were on the tour and it was okay, but it would have been better, you know, if we just spent that, you know, that few hundred, you know, more, and we gotten the next higher class ticket, then we would have had all these other facilities, then we would have been happy. You know, and the guy below you, you know, is thinking if he had just spent a little more and been in your class, he would have been happy. Like that.
Can we see then the audible one are even more illusory?
No, they're both pretty illusory. That makes sense. You have a Domino's pizza and you're eating it and you think it's good. That's illusory. That's not real. So it's just as illusory. But the other one, both of them will inspire you, because if you are engaged in what you feel is, what do you call it? Happiness, then you're inspired to do that again, right? And then what you hear about, they could add to that. You said, because you've done something, you're telling your friend, yeah, it was great, we did this, and they said, yeah, well, we did this, and then you've heard about it, and now you're inspired to do that or add that to yours, or his sounds better. Is that okay? In his commentary on these words, Sri Shankaracharya explains, right, because now you're talking Upanishads, so now you have the Upanishadic commentator. Here it is said that contemplation of sense objects is the root of all that is undesirable. So you're contemplating a sense object, but it's only a sense object, it's only called a sense object if you see it in relationship to yourself. Your enjoyment, right? If the object is contemplated, that the senses could be engaged in, but it's not for your pleasure, it's for Krishna's pleasure, then it's not called contemplation of the objects of the senses, right? Like you're looking at a pile of potatoes and thinking how I can cook this for myself, that's contemplating the objects of the senses, right? But if you're looking at this pile of potato and thinking how you can make a nice preparation for Krishna, it's not contemplating the senses. Right? So that means then it becomes speculation. Well, I could cook, I could bake them, and that would be great and all that. But then, you know, if they're fried, then that gives that other thing, and it would, you know, be quicker. And, you know, so all these different things, that's speculation. But if you're thinking the same thing for Krishna, what would be best? It's not speculation. Yes.
I found the fifth method.
The fifth method. Microwave.
But then again, that's pretty bad.
It's just boiling.
Heats up once, huh? Again, see? Told you. I mean, if you look at it, frying is actually just boiling in oil.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know. Yeah, of course. But is that the new generation of microwaves? Is that the old generation? Okay, so we see it always goes back to the same thing, is that if it's connected to Krishna, it's not a problem. If it's not connected to Krishna, it is a problem. That's all. So all these different things from different angles are all trying to convince us, right? Because we got that. But then when we move to the next point, looking at it from a different angle, then we have all kinds of questions about it, right? You understand? So that's why all these different angles are dealt with. I mean, the simple thing is we're the soul. Eternal servant of Krishna. We're supposed to serve him. He's happy. We're happy. That's it. Conversation's over.
12-year course finished.
Yeah, 12-year course finished. But, unfortunately, then we're not so convinced so easily.
So, we need at least 12 years.
Yeah, so 12 is the standard, you know, Gurukul training is 12 years, so that way it's enough that it soaks in really seriously. Okay. As a result, the jiva is mistaken the sense pleasure as bliss and the material world as Vaikuntha. Right? Okay, so the sense pleasure, that's what they call as ananda, rather than Krishna's happiness and the ananda that comes from that. Right? Because even here, when we yeah, okay. Does that make sense? This delusion is quite harmful to the soul. In the next sutra, the author describes the remedy for this deadly disease. Sutra 28. Vivekena tato vimuktihi. Using the intelligence's power of discrimination, one can become free from these illusions. Right? So again, come back to intelligence, buddhi yoga. Right? Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Here the word tata means from the two previously described illusions. Mukti means the individual soul's attained freedom, and vivekena means by understanding the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual spirit soul. Right? So by these proper, you know, sambandhigyan, then one can become freed from these two illusions and, you know, come to the problem. One can be freed from these two illusions. In the purport to Mantra 11, Srila Prabhupada explains how to defeat these illusions. The process by which one goes back to Godhead is a different branch of knowledge. And it has to be learned from revealed Vedic scriptures, such as the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. To become happy in this life and obtain a permanent blissful life after leaving this material body, one must study the sacred literature and obtain transcendental knowledge. That's happy in this life and, you know, going back to Godhead. Right? Because there's no been any clue, actually, that you'll be happy by any other method. Right? So even as we've discussed, the happiness by proper performance of duty, understanding the mechanics of the world, getting everything right, understanding the Brahman elements, Paramatma, and working in that way, that it will get you your results. But the problem is the attachment to getting that results on the material platform will still create the stress. But having done it in accordance with the philosophy and done it to please Krishna, that will start to give knowledge and detachment from it and that happiness of devotional service. But the thing itself will still give trouble. But if one says, the karmis are doing and they're not looking and they're not getting trouble. No, they are. Because in the previous verse it was describing that people call misery happiness. You know what I'm saying? You know, they're so drunk that they fall over themselves and like that, and they call that happiness. You know, so all these different things. You eat so much that you feel sick, and they call that happiness. So all these things are miserable. So they're not actually catching the difficulty that's coming up. So here is that it is on the material platform, as good as it gets, is material sense enjoyment. But it's still miserable because the amount that one's getting is so minuscule compared to what the soul can be getting by engaging in devotional service, that at some point one has to agree it's not worth it. Yes.
Once contemplating this point, I thought of an analogy that relayed when you had four people.
Okay,
baton.
Okay.
So that moment is like you're holding the baton, giving it to your partner. And if you're secure, you can let it go, so the process continues.
Yes,
but
yes.
If you're not secure and hold to it, the race won't continue.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of the knowledge and detachment comes, it should be applied like that. One shouldn't remain attached. So the idea is that one will get all the facility, but still that's not of interest. Otherwise, Prithu Maharaj, who's the emperor, then he's offered even greater facility, but he's not taking it. You know, because it's not going to give anything like that in actuality. It's only because we, from the platform of Shruti Shukat, we think it will give us. Right? So what we contemplate that will give us, you know, even if it's not someone else telling us, we're telling ourselves, still, you know, heard. You know? The conditioned living being has forgotten his eternal relationship with God and has mistakenly accepted the temporary place as his birth, of his birth as all in all. The Lord has kindly delivered the above-mentioned scriptures in India and other scriptures in other countries to remind the forgetful human being that his home is not here in this material world. The living being is a spiritual entity, and he can be happy only by returning to his spiritual home. So here is even establishing that these other scriptures, and the Lord arranges them for these other places. Right? The Vedic literatures he reveals in India. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.12 it is said, if a person knows the true nature of the soul, and if he thinks, I am spirit, then what will he desire in this material world? How will he become attached to his material body? Right? So if that's the point. So that he won't get attached to the body. But still, the point is it's not enough. One has to get attached to Krishna. But the mechanics are the same. You understand you're the soul, so why would you be attached to what's here? Because we're not that. Right? I mean, we're not this. We are that. Right? That's the aphorism. In the Mundaka Upanishad 229 it is said, thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. And this is also in Gita, right?
In Bhagavata.
Hmm?
In Bhagavata.
Oh, Bhagavata.
1.2.21.
Okay. Very good. And the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad one? Okay, sorry. In the Narada Pancharatra, second night, second chapter, right? Because Pancharatra means five nights. So first night will be the first night's discussion, second night's discussion, and then each night has its chapters. So, By associating with the devotees of Sri Krishna, one obtains unwavering, unmotivated, blissful devotional service that eventually allows one to serve Lord Krishna directly. As a tender new sprout on vines or trees grows with the rains and withers with the scorching sunshine, so a new sprout on the tree of devotional service grows by conversing with devotees and withers by conversing with non-devotees. Yes. In Bhagavad Gita 4:34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, "Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth." Okay, so here, then you're approaching, then creates the situation. Inquiring is the basis of the relationship, submissively, and then applying that, right? Then you'll get your transcendental knowledge, right? That'll be the result. So here is, in the association of devotees, then one can advance. Otherwise, it's not going to happen, right? So the next sutra defines the results of applying such discrimination. We're actually out of time. So it's through intelligence that you'll be able to discriminate. You won't get involved. So that means then you have to discriminate between matter and spirit. Right? That's actual intelligence. Just discriminating between one material element and another, that's not the real intelligence. That's why that's called aparavidya. Right? If it's connected to the Lord through Shastra and everything. But if it's not seen in connection with the Lord, that same discrimination between matter and matter is called avidya, ignorance. Right, so here, when they say knowledge, is discrimination between matter and spirit. Right, because before we discuss spirit, now we're discussing matter. You have to be able to tell the difference. If you can tell the difference, then we will not get absorbed in sense gratification, because it's not ours. Right, it's Upanishad. Everyone has their quota. It's not. It belongs to God. Right, you have your quota, but still your quota still belongs to God. So even your quota is to be used connected to the Lord.
Those last sutras touch upon Vasudeva in Sanvada and Aniruddha in Sanvada. Now, this was touching the process, and next one is touching the result.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainita and Gaurupana.